I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
I'm Ken Nash.
We're Building Bridges. How good it was to catch up with Dr. Helen Caldicott from our home in Australia, who birthed the international movements against atomic energy. Dr. Helen Caldicott, physician, activist, Nobel Peace nominee, Oscar-winning documentarian, author, and whose advocacy focuses on the medical and environmental hazards of nuclear energy, Dr. Helen Caldicott.
As we begin this conversation, there was an announcement that the Japanese government has begun the dumping of wastewater, toxic atomic waste from Fukushima in the Pacific Ocean. Your thoughts on the Japanese government on the near anniversary of Nagasaki and Hiroshima and that absolute genocide committed by the U.S. against that nation, dumping toxic wastewater and proclaiming its safety in the Pacific Ocean. Dr. Helen Caldicott.
What the Japanese are doing is medically obscene. There's not only tritium in that water, which cannot be removed by any mechanism. There's also plutonium, which has a half-life of 24,400 years, which is extremely carcinogenic. There's strontium-90, there's cesium-137, there's radioactive iodine-129 with a half-life of thousands of years. When these isotopes enter the seawater, they bioconcentrate in the algae, and they bioconcentrate hundreds or thousands of times more in the crustaceans, then in the little fish, then in the big fish, then finally in human bodies. And fish swim thousands of miles. You can't taste radioactive elements in fish. They are invisible to taste, smell, and sight. When they enter the body, cesium-137 goes to muscles and to the heart. It can cause sarcomas of the muscles. Strontium-90 goes to the bone, which can cause osteogenic sarcoma, leukemia or multiple myeloma, as the blood cells are made within the bone marrow. Plutonium is incredibly carcinogenic, and 1/1,000,000th of a gram can cause cancer. And plutonium migrates to, it crosses the placenta to damage the developing fetus, producing congenital defects. And all of these isotopes can affect the testicles and ovaries, causing genetic mutations to damage future generations and produce genetic diseases like cystic fibrosis. But there are over 2,000 genetic diseases. But not only are humans affected, but, well, animals eating the fish too will be impacted. It's a crime against not just humanity, but against the biological system of the Pacific Ocean.
I'm thinking of the song that was sung by Pete Seeger, "When Will We Ever Learn?" When will we ever learn?
Well, you see, the problem is that by having nuclear reactors everywhere, they produce massive amounts of radioactive waste, whether it be in the water or the fuel rods. The radioactive waste must be stored isolated from the ecosphere for 1,000,000 years, according to the Environmental Protection Agency, which is a physical impossibility. As this waste leaks, there's nothing you can put it in that will last longer than 100 years, be it steel or titanium or whatever. As it leaks over generations and gets into the food supplies via the water systems and bioconcentrates in food, the waste will over time produce epidemics of cancer, leukemia, congenital malformations, and genetic disease, not just in humans, but animals and plants as well, because they all get cancer and they can all have genetic malformations and genetic diseases. Nuclear power plants are cancer factories and will produce random compulsory genetic engineering for the rest of time.
What do we say to people who say, you're right about climate catastrophe caused by largely fossil fuels? So therefore, we feel that the way to proceed to save the planet is nuclear energy.
I'm a physician. I was on the faculty at Harvard Medical School. So I wrote a book called Nuclear Power is Not the Answer, published by the New Press. Read that. I wrote a book called Nuclear Madness. Read that. Educate yourselves. Close down the reactors you've got in America now. Stop making more nuclear weapons and stop spending nearly $1 trillion on your military which are your tax dollars, which should be used for education, free healthcare, which is what we've got in Australia, looking after the homeless, feeding the children and the like. Your country is a dick to death. It's not the Department of Defense. It's no defense. It's the Department of Death and Annihilation, and should be called that. The problem is that most people in the Congress and the Senate have shares in the military-industrial complex. They vote for any weapon system coming up the pike because it means jobs in their district and they get money in their pockets. Most of them, except AOC and others like that in the squad, are corporate prostitutes. They are not working for the people who elected them. They're not representing the people who elected them. They're representing the death industry. And this is extremely serious because America will probably blow up the world along with Russia.
Do you think that the nuclear time clock is even closer to midnight than it was in past years? And how are we to understand that politically, if that's the case?
I wake up in the morning and look out and my roses are still here. It could happen tonight. I mean, Putin has threatened to use nuclear weapons. America's probably got her weapons on a high state of alert. Biden has a three-minute decision time whether or not to launch nuclear weapons. A man walks behind Biden with a suitcase containing the codes to start a nuclear war. And we are on the edge of catastrophe and annihilation. It's just bloody obscene. And that money that America is spending should be spent, as I've said, on, you know, saving the world. We should be making friends with China, working with China together to stop global warming. We should be making friends with Russia. And what Trump did, he made friends with Russia. We shouldn't have any enemies. The only enemy is ourselves, destroying life on this magnificent planet of ours. We've got to wake up and understand our humanity and take over the Congress, knowing that the people in Congress are your representatives and you are their leaders. You need to get to know them. Tell them that if they don't vote the right way on nuclear power, nuclear weapons, and the military-industrial complex, you'll make sure they won't be elected next time. And nothing scares a congressperson or senator than losing the next election. That means you've got to get off your bottoms, leave your computers, and door knock and use your democracy. I know because I led the movement in the 80s against nuclear weapons, and we got the Nobel Prize for the work we did. But we had 80% of people opposing nuclear weapons. We've got 1 million people in Central Park in the march against nuclear war. We helped to end the Cold War. I met with Reagan in the White House for an hour and a quarter, alone, talking to him about nuclear war, educating him. And he eventually met with Gorbachev, and the Cold War ended. I was one of the leaders of that movement, so I know how to mobilize people. I practice global preventive medicine, educating people about the worst epidemic that could possibly occur. I know how to do it. I'd like to address a joint session of Congress. I'd like to talk to Putin. I'd like to talk to Biden face to face.
How do you explain, after the vibrancy you referenced, the million people march that I was at in Central Park and a vibrant, active movement, a ban the bomb movement, numerous groups with one permutation or another of that name, it seems that it has fallen into quietude, that level of organizing and countering nuclear weaponry, and now those who would be the exponents of the development of nuclear energy as an alleged substitute for fossil fuel industry destruction of the planet. How do you understand where we're at politically and why there has been this dampening down of a movement?
As Marshall McLuhan said, the media is the message. I was lucky enough to have a Hollywood agent who represented all the major film stars, Sally Field, Lily Tomlin, and Tom Cruise. And she worked for me for free. And she got me into Vogue and Life and Time and Family Circle and on all the television stations and on with Phil Donahue and 60 Minutes and the like. Through the media, as a doctor, I was able to educate people about the medical implications of nuclear war and the medical implications of nuclear power. There's no one doing that now. We need a new agent who understands the media for people like Tom Cruise and the like to get people like me on the media. Now, I'm in Australia and I tend to be retired because I'm 85, but someone like me needs to get on and teach Mr. and Mrs. Joe Sixpack sitting watching the television every night the medical dangers that will accrue to them and their children if they don't understand this and do something about it. That's what we need to be doing, because the earth does have a fatal disease.
Are you also suggesting that maybe social media has taken us away from the vibrancy and immediacy of door knocking and one-on-one organizing to really mobilize people? It's created an alienation.
I think social media is a displacement activity. When you see people in the restaurants and on the trains and the buses, they're all looking at their phones. Yeah, they're being distracted from the issues at hand.
The film now, Oppenheimer, I do not know if you have seen it or not. It seems to me minimally it has a teachable moment, but I also found it very frustrating because brilliance and intellect is somehow siphoned off or bifurcated from a social value system. And I refuse to just say that academia in and of itself, or the sheer technical wisdom of understanding the physics of nuclear energy is sufficient to call somebody brilliant when they are participants in unleashing a force that is permanently destructive and can annihilate the very people who created it. Your thoughts on the film, though?
Well, Oppenheimer knew that. So half the film was spent on accusing Oppenheimer of being a communist. But how pathetic is that? And it didn't show the true victims of the Trinity explosion. Yeah. Still getting cancer now from that explosion. The fallout went all over America. I think they blew up 10 pounds of plutonium too in an experiment, when 1 milligram plutonium will induce cancer. It's obscene. Nor did they show what happened in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. I mean, I'll just read you this. They didn't need to show much, but they needed to do this. People exposed within half a mile of the atomic fireball were seared to bundles of smoking char in a fraction of a second as their internal organs boiled away. The small black bundles now stuck to the streets and bridges and sidewalks of Hiroshima numbered in the thousands.
Do you feel that the film continued a kind of glorification of the scientific project and of Oppenheimer, irrelevant to or out of context of the human disaster, which is part of what Hollywood oftentimes does, even though it was somewhat critical and gave some voice to Oppenheimer just before the development of the H-bomb as being somewhat, I wouldn't say remorseful, but questioning the development of nuclear weaponry. Do you think it was a glorification of a science absent, again, a value system?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, I once debated Teller. I think he was scared that I would reveal what he'd done and what an absolute wicked man he'd been. So it was a very interesting time.
What did you say? What was the exact nature of the debate, and what did you say to him?
Admiral Jean LaRocque and I were describing nuclear war, what it would mean to the human race and how it could happen. And I can't remember really what Teller said. I can't, but it didn't turn into a powerful debate because I didn't lay into him, and I should have done that. So it was an opportunity missed.
And why would you not have been more aggressive with the father of the H-bomb?
A newspaper once approached me in the West and said, what do you think of Teller? This will be for his obituary. And I said, there's a hot place in hell reserved for Edward Teller. And it's true.
You mentioned the fact that there was very little said in the film. It was a kind of glorification of the Trinity test without any acknowledgement of the downwinders, who are now people in their third generation dying of cancers. Of course that Teller and the military certainly knew of this before the test. And yet, but it also, what was troubling to me in terms of the film is they never talk about the people who are excavating, digging the uranium, What happens to the indigenous people? Also, the uranium that right now, even in Niger and so on in Africa, much of our interest has to do with controlling those territories through colonialist and neocolonialist regimes because of the uranium. I found the film so truncated. It's understanding and analysis as though the bomb develops with the best of intentions outside of the consequences of the human condition, the planet, the science itself. I don't know if that was your thought, so I came out a little bit miffed.
Well, Nolan said, who made the film, the director, that it was really about Oppenheimer's life, and I can understand that. But I agree with you. I mean, there needs to be another film made now, a post-Oppenheimer film, but I don't think anyone will do that.
What evoked from you the centrality of your life to fight against nuclear energy, nuclear weaponry, but nuclear energy in all of its manifestations as something that is destructive to plants and living things? What actually provoked you to become so immersed in this and to lend yourself so fully?
Well, I'm a doc. I led the movement against the French nuclear test in Australia. We got a lot of fallout, and I wrote a letter to the paper saying children could get leukemia from drinking milk with radioactive fallout. And then I was on television, and I was on television a lot. Australians don't like the French, so there were spontaneous marches of thousands in the streets. People stopped buying French wine, French cheese. And finally, Prime Minister took France to the International Court of Justice, and they were forced to test underground. So I became quite famous in that area while I was still practicing medicine, actually working 80 hours a week. And then I found out Australia wanted to mine uranium. I knew nothing about it. So I went to the library in the university, got out a book called Poison Power by Goffman and Tamplin. Goffman was an MD. He helped to discover plutonium. And the Atomic Energy Agency asked them to write a book about what medical consequences could come from nuclear power. When I read that book, my hair dropped out. So I understood about nuclear power then. Then I went all around Australia talking to the unions, which were very powerful at the time, about the medical effects of mining uranium. The whole union movement passed a resolution to ban uranium mining. But then we had a very bad prime minister called Bob Hawke, who spent a lot of time working with the CIA. He opened up the issue to three uranium mines. But then I got to America. Someone asked me to talk at a local person's house about nuclear power, and I did. I did write a book, which was Nuclear Madness, and that introduced the whole issue, sold very big, and it came out just as Three Mile Island melted down. I spoke to a huge audience just after that happened, and so I became quite well known because of Three Mile Island. And then I started Physicians for Social Responsibility and recruited 23,000 doctors to teach people about the medical effects of both nuclear war and nuclear power. And then I wanted to start a women's party for survival. And people said, don't be ridiculous. There are only two parties in America, which was silly. I should have done it. It would have been a great idea. But I started Women's Action for Nuclear Disarmament. And we had a very big impact educating Americans about the medical effects of all things nuclear. For me, it was practicing preventive global medicine.
As you look at the U.S. today and you look at the development of the weaponry, as you say, it's not a Department of Defense, but a Department of Destruction and Death. The funds
the
that
Department
go into
Department of Annihilation,
it,
I really say. Anyway, go
annihilation,
on.
Annihilation, better yet. The war in Ukraine, which is tipping the provocation of the use by accident or otherwise of nuclear disaster. Your thoughts on where we are politically that has perhaps taken us back even a step into what looked like it might actually be a movement that would really begin to limit nuclear weapons and to really take us further on just the road to disarmament.
I see no sign of that happening at all in America.
Is it worse than that? Is it actually
Yes, it's worse
that
than that
you...
because a very destructive woman, Victoria Nuland, who is now Under Secretary of State, who orchestrated the Maidan Square massacre in the Ukraine and got rid of the democratically elected president, put in the president now, who sort of orchestrated the Ukrainian situation. She's a very dangerous woman. I think Biden's a little bit senile. He's done some good things economically, but he's up to his neck. He doesn't understand. He's not doing anything about the military-industrial complex. Nuland's extraordinarily dangerous, and so is Blinken, Secretary of State, although he's the son of Holocaust parents. We're in very dangerous hands. There's no one confronting them or challenging the situation at all that I see in America. No one.
How do you look at the international movements and efforts towards disarmament and to deal with the START Treaty, to deal with the weaponization of space and the various other things that have taken us closer, that nuclear alarm clock to the midnight hour? Do you think that there is a credible developing movement, or what else needs to be done to stimulate its growth and propel it forward more ferociously?
Well, we need some inspirational leaders like Martin Luther King, you know, or like I was in the 80s. It seems bad to compare myself to him, but in fact, what we did was similar. But there is a very good treaty in the United Nations called the Treaty to Prohibit Nuclear Weapons. I think up to 90 countries have signed, but 7 nuclear nations have not. There's no pressure on them to sign it, and they won't. We're in the hands of evil people, and I say real evil.
Well, I would suggest really galloping fascism if the likes of the entire Republican Party that has fallen like a house of dominoes over the most traditional tropes of the anti-immigrant sentiment and white supremacy, and they are part of the enhancement and redevelopment and further of the carceral state, the military-industrial complex. It's a rather depressing time at this juncture.
It's terrifying, Mimi. So, it's terrifying.
It is terrifying. So the film Oppenheimer, is that essentially a teachable moment? And if so, what is the teaching, and how do we rekindle the kind of sentiment to build a national, international movement against nuclear energy in all of its manifestations, as well as, of course, the most immediate and terrifying prospect of nuclear war?
It's hard to know. There's a person in Australia who wants to make a documentary about me, but, you know, it would never get the exposure that Oppenheimer got. You have to have exposure to the national media to educate people. And I can't see anyone using that at the moment.
We have a youth community that is very interested in environmental preservation, is frightened that they will not have a future in a way that I haven't seen young people since really the Vietnam War. So is there not indeed with the youth community, a tremendous interest and beginning to understand and link environmental issues to the issues of the development of nuclear energy and nuclear warfare?
Well, they're not. I mean, I can understand that the movement, the kids, I mean, I'd be one of them if I was young, about their future, because they have none. I mean, you can, what's happening with global warming, we can see it happening before our very eyes, and they're terrified. But they haven't yet aligned themselves with understanding the dangers of nuclear war and how it could happen tomorrow. Someone needs to educate these lovely, lovely, lovely young people about the nuclear danger. And that's not happening, Mimi. That's not happening.
Your final thoughts and your understanding, okay, whether it's political period and the issue of nuclear energy in this terrible context and terrible political period that we're operating in.
We are in a very difficult situation now, facing not just global warming, annihilation of life on Earth slowly, or facing nuclear war, annihilation of life on Earth for hours exchange of nuclear weapons between Russia and America, which would induce nuclear winter, freezing the Earth to death over time, blocking out the Earth's sun. We're at a key point in the history of the planet. I got to know Robert McNamara late in his life, who was the Secretary of State under Kennedy. He was in the Oval Office during the Cuban Missile Crisis. McNamara said to me, "Helen, we came so close to nuclear war." Mm. He said, "We came to within 3 minutes of nuclear war." So you have to understand that our lives are in great jeopardy, that we must treasure everything we've got, treasure our children, treasure our future, rise up and take control of our planet. We are the leaders. The people in Congress are our representatives. The president is our representative. We must take over and make sure that we, the people, including the young generation, have a secure future, safe from global warming and safe from nuclear war. Spend the money that America spends on death, transfer it to spending it on life. Abolish nuclear weapons, sign the treaty in the UN to abolish nuclear weapons, close our nuclear reactors, which are cancer factories in truth, and stop burning fossil fuel, uncover the country with solar panels, electric cars, and windmills. The answers are here. We've got the treatment. We've got the cure to the diseases impacting the planet at the moment. It's in our hearts, our minds, and our bodies. We must rise up like Atlas and take the earth on our shoulders and save it.
Dr. Helen Caldicott, we will heed your words. We will make it so. I thank you so much for your relentless thought and creativity and humor and beauty that you've brought to the struggle and continue to. You are truly an inspiration.
You were listening to Dr. Helen Caldicott, the grand dame, if you will, one of the most significant fighters for peace and justice in the international community, who has led the struggle for most of the 85 years of her wonderful life against the proliferation of nuclear weapons and against nuclear energy. Make it a thing of the past. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
I'm Ken Ash.
And we say educate, educate, and organize for another world is possible if we choose to make it so.